House Resources meeting to order. Okay, yeah. It is 1:00, shortly after 1:00. I should probably announce who's not here, it'd be easier. Representative Tuck, Seaton.
I'm here.
No, I'm sorry. Representative Newman and Olson are present. Today we have before us the sponsor statement for, I'm sorry, we don't have the sponsor statement, we have the whole bill. SB 217, Representative Newman. Remind everyone to turn your cell phones off. No texting, surfing the net during the committee meeting. With that, Representative Newman, if you'd like to begin, we anxiously await your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've anxiously been waiting to go through this issue and see what we can do to create some jobs in this state. And if I may, Mr. Chair, too, because it's an important issue, I'd sure like we have to have involvement from all of our members, too. So if we want to maybe work on this and bring it back again, be my wish. But that said.
Ms. Representative Newman, we give a party for those that come. If this bill has legs and we decide to pass it out, we will. And as the committee continues to grow, we will. We may be academic. While we have a break, Representative Gutenberg and Kawasaki have joined us.
Good thing.
Thank you. Go, proceed.
Okay, Mr. Chair, what we did is worked off initial legislation that we already have in place that talks about the 5% production tax that is currently in place for gas, including LNG, for in-state electrical generation and home heating. And originally, I was trying to go back on memory, I think it was Representative Roeckberg that went back where we had cooking the gas, and we expanded that to 5% to try and make sure we had more exploration there. And then during ACES, it was expanded statewide, and where the version for home heating and electric generation was included in there. And so in an effort to try and do all we can to provide opportunities for an anchor tenant for an in-state gas pipeline, my preference or seemed the goal to try and be more like a GTL plant or NGL exports, whatever the case may be, that those gas, if that gas is used to create jobs in Alaska, that the production tax would be at a 5% production rate instead of the current 25% plus progressivity.
Pretty simple. Any other comments or questions from the committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this isn't limited to any basin. This is across the entire state. Is that correct?
Representative Newman.
If it's in Alaska.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Seaton, follow up.
I'm trying to figure out if we're talking about the large gas and oil exploration on the North Slope. How will a differential tax rate on the gas work as far as the allocation of costs under our current production tax credits and production taxes, as far as allocation between allowing deduction or deductibility for expenses and between oil and gas? If they're both oil and gas, how does the credits and the tax, our participation in the wells and in the infrastructure, how does that change if we have differential tax rates?
Representative Seaton, again, going back to the original content of what we worked this off on the back of, you know, this PPT law is passed, and it has to do, it's a gas production tax. It's not the oil, it's a gas production tax. And currently, there's many different rates that are used, you know, for oil and deductions and credits available for whether it's downstream, midstream, upstream, you know, what fields at the end, and so that's already in place there. I'm just talking, all this bill does, it says if you take gas and put it into a factory to create jobs for the state of Alaska, that gas will be at a lower production rate. And I guess we got some guys here from revenue and oil and gas if you got some questions for them, but that's my intent here. And that's, it has a positive fiscal note, I understand. So nothing for nothing is nothing.
Hey, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton, just so everyone knows, we do have Marcia Davis, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue, and Gary Rogers, oil and gas specialist, online for questions that might be more for those guys, just so everyone is aware who's online. And Kevin Banks is here. Well, we'll hear from him later. Representative Seaton?
Thank you. And I appreciate that, and I'm not meaning that I'm opposed. I'm just trying to figure out how it works. But and also on manufactured, is that going to apply to, under this bill, liquefied natural gas? Or is that a product or not a product that's different?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, liquefied natural gas is a gas. If that liquefied natural gas, and we just called Don Bullock 10 minutes ago, so we got clarification. If that liquefied natural gas is used for home heating or electrical generation, it currently is taxed at the 5% production tax rate.
Representative Seaton, I think what we're doing is we're adding to that which is already there. So what we're adding is or used as fuel stock in manufacturing. So the generation is already there. If it's used for fuel in state, is that your question? Are you looking? You're looking at.
My question is: this is a manufacturing process, and is LNG conversion of gas to LNG? Is that a manufacturing process? And I'm just wanting clarification.
Right. No. And I appreciate that. And I think it would depend on the use. It's already covered if it's used as fuel in state as a 5%. What we're talking about is feedstock. And I think,
Chairman, this is Gary Rogers, the Department of Revenue and the Tax Division in Anchorage.
Okay, go ahead, Gary. If you can answer the question.
Okay. Good afternoon, Representative Seaton, through the chair. Under our current law, we do not treat LNG as a manufactured product. We treat it as gas, and we net it back from its ultimate disposition point or sales delivery point. We do not consider it a manufacturing process, but the conversion of natural gas to LNG is presently a transportation process.
Representative Seaton?
Follow-up, and excuse me, who was it that was online?
Gary Rogers. Mr. Rogers, he's an oil and gas revenue specialist.
Okay, and Mr. Rogers, I just want to make sure that is that a interpretation or is that a statutory definition? I'm just concerned that we could get into the argument of an LNG export facility and then have very little tax rate on it, and I don't believe that is the sponsor's intention here, and I just want to make sure that we're not at some point down the line that we get into a hustle on that.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I believe it is in regulation and our past history of practice, but I do not believe it's statutory. So that would be an item that would certainly be recommended for clarification. Is if it was intended to be a manufactured product to be treated under this bill, that be clarified as such. But currently, it's not.
Thank you, Mr.
Powell.
No, that answered my question.
Any additional questions while we have a point? Representative Newman, do you have anything else? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes,
Representative Tuck.
Excuse me. Clarification.
Yeah, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really enjoy the intent of this and want to encourage manufacturing in the state of Alaska. But can you give us just a rundown, Representative Newman, on what kind of developments that you see, what kind of areas that you would like to see be promoted with this?
Thank you for that question, Representative Tuck, through the chair, Representative Tuck. Eventually what I would like to see this turn into is the opportunity to create jobs in Alaska. An incentive or a way to try and inspire operation such as a gas to liquids plant doing alternative fuels, purposefully to create an anchor tenant for an in-state gas pipeline. because, you know, I think our ultimate goal here is eventually an in-state gas pipeline to help create jobs. The opportunity to have possibly gas to Donlin Creek, where right now it's my understanding that the owners of that may pull the trigger on that one and dump it because they can't get electricity, or energy, I mean. And so these are long-term legacy jobs. Thousands of jobs are dependent on an in-state gas pipeline that's dependent on an anchor tenant. And so I think that that's very important of what we can do. And this is just the very beginning of that discussion, you know, of what can be done on that. But, you know, again, long-term legacy jobs for Alaskans is the end goal on this. And, Mr. Chair, if I may respond to Representative Seaton's...
you have the floor, Representative.
Through the Chair, Representative Seaton, when you look at manufacturing, we have law and the terminologies in the dictionary on that. Manufacturing is described as a molecular change. If this was to only be done, considered for LNG export, obviously that would compete against AGEA or any exports, you know, or something like that in a large diameter pipeline. That's not what we're talking about here. The manufacturing process is basically a molecular change, or changing it. You're manufacturing it. You're turning it into something else. You're changing it into a product other than gas. In this case of a gas to liquids processing plant, it would go through a Fischer-Tropsch process to create an alternative fuel. Jet fuels, diesel fuels, those types of things, marine diesels.
Thank you. Any other questions for the sponsor, Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so the way the statute is right now, we're still able to use gas as a fuel to promote other industries currently, right? There's no limitations on, the fuel that's being used for manufacturing, for fueling their plants, we already know it's for generation, but also if it happens to be the catalyst for a process, currently, do they receive that 5% tax credit?
Through the Chair, Representative Tucker, I'm trying to understand the question that you said if the gas is currently used as a catalyst to create a product, is it so like the agri and fertilizer plant or something like that? I'm trying to.
Yeah, but that's actually a feedstock situation, which I think you're trying to include through the Chair. But for example, if you had like a smelter plant and you wanted to be able to use natural gas in the heating process, we're covered with this, currently with statute, right?
Well, through the Chair, Representative Tuck, I don't know. That's not what this bill does, and it doesn't affect that. Maybe there's some other people who could answer that. But
Representative Tuck, I see.
Chairman,
some people.
This is Gary Rogers again. Perhaps I can answer that.
Jump in there, Mr. Rogers.
Okay. We issued an advisory bulletin in February of last year that kind of addressed these questions. We had a question from a company asking much the same type of question. If I use gas as part of the feedstock in manufacturing, does it qualify as gas used in state? And no, it does not. But if I use gas as fuel to generate electricity or to run equipment or to generate heat, that does qualify as used in state. So hopefully that answers your question on that.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kawasaki?
Just sort of along the same lines, we have production plant that does jet fuel in Fairbanks. I just wondered how the change in this under Section 24 would how that would impact them specifically, because currently they use oil. They use portions of the oil to create heat. Would this now mean that they would be able to use that? It seems like fuel or feedstock. It sounds like they'd be able to use that as a 5%.
Representative Kawasaki, I think they use oil and this is natural gas. They would love to have an opportunity to use natural gas. But right now, they just use oil. I believe this is natural gas. And Representative Newman, I don't want to speak for you, but jump in there. I think I'm...
Through the Chair, Representative Kawasaki, they currently purchase, my understanding, their electricity from Golden Valley Electric. Golden Valley Electric has a gas pipeline to them where they can create electricity that's used for electrical generation.
So Golden Valley, okay.
Any additional questions for the sponsor before we have the department up here to shed some wisdom, light? Thank you, Representative Newman. Stand by. I'm sure you'll be coming up here, but we will have additional questions, I think. In the audience, we have Dan Stickle. Are you prepared? Thank you. And if you'd state your name, who you're with, and proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dan Stickle. I'm a petroleum economist with the Department of Revenue. We also have Deputy Commissioner Marcia Davis, and you heard from Gary Rogers, our oil and gas revenue specialist, and the three of us are available to answer your questions.
Okay. And you have no testimony or support or anything on this bill? Any questions for Mr. Stickle? Is it Stickle or Stickle?
Stickle.
Stickle. Sir. Mr. Stickle? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I had asked the question earlier, I think you heard it posed, of if we were talking about a large project on the North Slope. How would this influence the credits and the deductions for expenses for a field that is both oil and gas, since almost all our fields have both products?
Yeah, Representative Seaton, through the Chair, we haven't looked specifically at how this would relate to a facility on the North Slope.
Representative Seaton, through the Chair, this is Gary Rogers again.
Mr. Rogers, go ahead.
Let me touch on some general things that might help answer your question. Because gas used in state is considered a favored tax rate under the ACES legislation in Section 4355.011, subparagraph O, the allocation of costs part of your question isn't based on credits or tax rates. It's based on equivalent BTU barrels. So if you had a unit with both oil and gas, and you had to allocate cost, you would do it based on the BTU equivalents of each. As far as credits, some of the credits, such as the exploration tax credits, you might have a reduction in you have some tax savings due to the favored tax rate for gas used in state. And that could limit you on the application of some of your credits if you had unused tax credits under 4355.025. But other than that, there's pretty much not really an effect.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. So the allocation of lease costs is then on the BTU of what's coming out of the well as oil or as gas, and not on the value, the monetary value of oil and gas. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Representative Seaton, through the Chair, that's correct.
There was a BTU equivalent in ACES, that oil and gas, that you treat them similarly. It's something we'll have to deal with in the future, without a doubt. But right now, they're treated pretty much the same. Representative Seaton, follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to, you know, understand the right consequences of all I'm trying to figure out in it. So if we have a BTU at 6,000 to 1, or 6 to 1, and we have a value difference of 15 to 1, which is about where we are today,
right.
I'm trying to figure out what that does, whether it's a positive incentive or a negative incentive, if we have a potential field that is going to have credits or upstream costs, and how those are allocated to a well. So
Mr.
I'm not sure if it's, if you have more gas, it's good, or if you have more oil. I mean, as far as the upstream cost allocation goes, if we're doing it on a BTU basis.
Mr. Rogers, do you have a, you have an answer to that, or do you understand the question or need more clarification?
I think I understand the question, Mr. Chairman. It's something I think that would require a little bit of modeling. I don't have an answer for that off the top of my head. I just know that with the ACEs, the tax limitation rates that favor gas used in state and Cook Inlet, for example, there was also a provision under O11M that affected your credits. And I don't believe the ACEs legislation specifically told us how to allocate costs between oil and gas. And I think it's something we came up with in regulation that we would do it on BTU equivalent barrels.
Mr. Rogers, are you saying that you have the regulations written?
There were some regulations written. I think it was one of the very first packages of regulations we did.
Just checking. Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd just like, if we could request the department, you know, as this moves along, I think it's background information that I need, and I think probably all the committee does. So if we could get them to prepare us some.
Yeah, just estimate. Yeah, for the committees, there are a couple for information. I think that we'll probably, I don't think the Monday meeting will take a full 2 hours, so it's my intention to, on Monday morning, bring this up, or Monday afternoon in the meeting, to bring this up prior to our meeting with the TransCanada. Hopefully we can have those answered and we can get this done fairly quickly. So I don't intend to move this today, but I would encourage everyone to get with the sponsor, get these questions answered, and if there's an amendment, I think there's a potential amendment for clarification that you discussed earlier. We're not going to try to get this out of the committee today. I think there are some clarifications, even though it goes to finance, and I know they'll do due diligence as well. It does only have the two committees, and I think it's incumbent upon us to look at these areas. So just so the committee knows, that is the intention. So anything that we can get on the table today that we need to, that we can address, but I would like to move it out on Monday unless we come up with some huge, huge problem. But I would like to give the committee an opportunity to look at it, to take advantage of that time to get with the sponsor to clarify any questions that you might have, and the department as well. Any other questions for Mr. Stickel? Yes, sir. Representative Gunberg.
You know, the packet is a little thin, so we'll just keep peeling this open. And are there definitions of feedstock? We know exactly what a feedstock is. I mean, we all think we know what it means. But what is there regulations governing defining what a feedstock is?
I hope you're not asking me that question.
Mr. Gutenberg, through the chair, this is Gary Rogers. We do not have a regulatory definition at this moment of what a feedstock is. It's probably more or less we just adopted it's a term common used in the industry.
You know it when you see it.
Yes.
Another
Representative, follow-up? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, just jumping around a little bit. Because this deals with both oil and gas, two things. Are there, because this is just in-state, how is this, what is the feeling of this with the Commerce Clause? Is there any conflict with the Commerce Clause?
Representative Gutenberg to the chair?
Yeah.
This is Gary Rogers again. You started your statement out by saying this deals with both oil and gas. The used in state only applies to gas used in state under 4355.011.0. That's the only used in state reduced tax rate. And so there's no oil in there, it's just gas.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's in...
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's in Chapter 55, which oil and gas production tax.
It, Representative Gutenberg, through the chair. This is Marcia Davis, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue.
Ms. Davis, go ahead, please. Shed some light.
When ACES was passed under subsection O to the basic Section 11, Section 11 of ACES is what establishes all the various tax rates. Subsection O was added late in the process, but subsection O was a specific provision targeting only gas that was used in state, and this was put in place to provide some mitigation of the costs of use of gas for the citizens of the state of Alaska. And at the time that this was inserted, I do recall Department of Law discussing the constitutionality of this particular provision, and you are correct that there was a, I think it's a privileges and immunities type of an argument that makes this provision perhaps somewhat vulnerable, but the conclusion was that until gas was exported and used as fuel outside of the state, such that there were people who could claim a disparity or unequal protection of the laws, it was there were no fouls being committed by this particular section, that it would not be until gas was exported from the state for use in the lower 48 that we would see a vulnerability. And I think for that reason, there was a sunset put on the subsection O, which requires it to go away as of the calendar year the end of calendar year 2021.
Just letting that sink in for a second.
Okay. We have some time. It's okay. Any other questions while good representative and I as well let that soak in a little bit? Any other representative Seaton?
Yeah, since we have the deputy commissioner on the line, I guess, and I think we're going to get some spreadsheets, but I just want a little, little more definition there. On the allocation or the expenses that someone gets to write off lease expenses for tax credits on a gas and oil well, let's say it's on the North Slope. Do I understand that if it's an oil well, then we would be looking at the tax credit plus the tax rate on oil, including the progressivity, depending upon what the profits are going to be, and if it's on gas and the tax rate is 5%, that basically the maximum you could get is then just 5% plus your tax credit instead of being having state participation such as 45 or 50% in the well drilling process and lease expenses.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the tax, this particular provision that gives a reduced tax rate is essentially trying to say that if gas from a location other than Cook Inlet, which primarily we're looking at right now thinking about North Slope, if gas is burned and used as fuel in the state, it will have the lower tax rate. That means that a North Slope producer that uses gas in the process of their operations would, to the extent that gas is taxable, because first of all, we have gas that actually is used in the course of the operation is not taxed, it's part of the overall cost. It's what they consume in producing the oil and gas from the get-go. But assuming that they have gas up there that gets used to, say, burned as heat for the Dead Horse Airport or you know, wherever it may be up there on the slope, it will have that lower tax rate. If a producer incurred that tax in the course of their whatever they're doing, it lowers their overall lease expenditures. I mean, it basically is a cost that they're doing business. So I'm not really sure how it's going to detriment the operations on the North Slope or impact us significantly in our calculation of credits, et cetera, in the overall oil and gas production operation on the North Slope.
Follow-up.
Yeah, and Representative Seaton, through the chair, this is Gary Rogers. Let me please follow up just a comment on what Commissioner Davis said, that the tax rate is the lower of the tax calculated by taking your value less your lease expenditures or the 5% tax rate on gas used in state. And if there is a significant difference between the ACES tax rate on your value less your lease expenditures, i.e. the 25% progressivity, and the 5% tax rate on gas used in state, that difference may reduce the availability of some of your tax credits that you would otherwise apply in that year. But there's not a direct impact on lease expenditures themselves of the 5% used in state tax rate.
Representative Seaton.
I guess where I'm coming from is that in ACES we had a general philosophy that we were going to have a profit tax and it was going to be fairly high, and we're going to have credits that were really good credits, and those two things added together were going to give a lot of state participation in the lease expenditures. And if we have a production tax tax that is limited to 5%, my question is then our participation going to be limited to 20% tax credit for drilling something plus 5%, so that the maximum incentive that we will have to give a company to go, you know, explore and drill as long as not over 25 miles away and those kind of things, just considering the 20% tax credit as a base, that our maximum incentive then is 25% participation instead of, in some cases, we're getting 60 and 65% participation in exploration and development wells. And I'm, you know, it may not be, but I'm trying to understand whether doing this we actually lower the incentive for investment in the field. It would be a great deal after you're producing, but I'm trying to figure out whether we're actually severely restricting the incentive to drill, because we're not participating in those expenses to the extent we were under ACES.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I think it's just the opposite. We are participating, and we are providing incentive by telling a producer that your tax rate is lower, it's limited to 5% on gas that you happen to use in state that meets these qualifications or these proposed qualifications. And so that in itself is an incentive compared to the ACES tax rate, which is 25% base plus progressivity, which depends on a combined production tax value of oil and gas combined. So it's difficult to put the exact incentive in numbers unless you run scenarios with prices and price levels and lease expenditure levels. But I think part of it is the simplification that if you have gas used in state, the tax may not exceed the 5% limitation rate. And that in itself is an incentive. But you're not really losing lease expenditures or anything. They're still there. You still get them, and you still get all your credits. You may have to defer some of the credits, but most of the credits are still available. They're not lost. Anyway, and this is Gary Rogers again, but hopefully I lifted some of the fog on that.
Representative Seaton?
I think I'm still a little foggy here because our understanding was when we created this system that we were having a 25% base tax rate with progressivity, and that gave a fairly high tax rate, but you got to deduct that at that tax rate from your lease expenditures, and therefore the state could be participating, you know, 60, even 70% or something like that. We were actually worried at some points on the graphs of actually getting over 100% state participation under certain scenarios, but it was based on the tax rate, including progressivity. And if we don't have that, if we have a limit of 5% tax rate, it seems like you get your full tax credit for your lease expenditures, but it seems like that the state participation is based on the PPT or the ACES, the tax rate. And I think we have maybe somebody else can explain.
And if I may be wrong, but I thought the infield expenditure was based on the expenses, not necessarily the rate, tax rate. So there's a sliding scale, certainly, but I think basically what we're doing with this is treating North Slope gas just like Cook Inlet gas. Representative Seaton, I followed you. Did I confuse you really badly then?
Well, I don't know. I think we have oil and gas here. Maybe
then he'll be up in a minute. Representative Tubb, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just making sure I'm trying to wrap my mind around everything, too. But basically, we're offering the same deal that we offer Cook Inlet gas to others, as long as it's consumed within state. And now we're opening it up for fuel or for electricity power generation. And now we're trying to open that up for a manufacturing process. But the one who may be manufacturing may not be the same person who is producing the gas. So I guess my question is, the tax cap is for the producer, but not necessarily the manufacturer. So we, with this bill, are hoping that the manufacturer will be able to have a reduced gas or a preferred gas supply due to the tax break offered to the producer. Am I correct?
I'm not, and without speaking to the sponsor, I don't know if it's preferred, but I think it would lower the price. Okay. And in lowering the price would give that incentive for a manufacturer to come in. And that's the mission of this, to create the jobs. I don't think you're going to have a ConocoPhillips or a BP or an Exxon come in and build a gas-to-liquids plant, for example. That'll be a third party who will be able to buy that fuel at a lesser rate because we're giving a tax reduction to the producer. So it'll flow, the price will flow down.
Okay.
And if it doesn't, they won't build. I mean, it's that simple, and there won't be that market. So we're guaranteed a certain amount of that just by, it won't happen without it, I don't think. Is that accurate? I don't want to speak for the sponsor, but that's my understanding of what we're trying to do here. And he is?
I'll answer you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions before we call up Mr. Banks? Thank you. Kevin, I know that your name is blank here. Whether you want to testify or answer questions, we always enjoy hearing from you, though.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really don't have any prepared remarks, but I've been listening to the discussion in here, and I don't know if I should be worried or not, but I feel like I'm the only one that understands where Representative Seaton is going with his questions. So let me offer to when the folks who are on the phone huddle up and get ready for the next hearing, I'll give them a call and we can work through it. But I know where you're taking this, and I understand where your concern is. And I suppose it would make, you know, we can have that discussion among ourselves and try to respond to your questions next week.
Representative Seaton, if you want to.
And Mr. Chairman, that would be fine. Hopefully we'll get some spreadsheets or some, you know, something, diagrams that'll help lead us through this too, because I'm trying to understand the consequences of what we're doing, because obviously, you know, and I'm not unsupportive of this.
Right.
I mean,
we certainly want to understand what we're doing. Ms. Davis, are you going to be able by Monday to have us some modeling done on this to see what it looks like at some various prices?
Chairman Johnson, Yes, I think we should be able to do something that will compare the situation of a North Slope producer providing gas with and without this particular incentive, and we can essentially show the economics and how it would appear from the perspective of a North Slope producer, and I think that should answer Representative Seaton's question.
Thank you, and that's, I don't want to put you under too much under the gun. Well, yes, I do, really. But I want to make sure that we're asking something that's reasonable. Representative Seaton has a follow-up.
And I just wanted to make sure that as we go down that we look at the effect on the incentives for drilling and production, as well as just the sale of gas that you have. So.
Yeah, and actually, Representative Seaton, through the chair, that's what I discerned was your dominant concern, was what we were doing to the inherent incentives that were the structure of ACES.
That's correct. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Representative Goodenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seaton's concerns are one I share in this, what it touches. I mean, what is the domino effect, and what does it reach out and start adjusting and changing, and the unintended consequences. But Representative Tuck brings up an interesting situation, and you're delivering fuel for consumption, and it's not the manufacturer, the one that gets the break. It's the one that's delivering it. It's not the one that needs it. And there's no over-compelling reason to say that they would get the break. And that's the concern. I mean, I live in a town with an oil line going through it, and we don't get a break. Matter of fact, the state sells its commodity for the highest price it could get. And we pay gasoline as high as it is in the nation. So who gets the break where? Is the way this is set up, is the word delivered as compared with use might be more appropriate, use for consumption, so that it's the manufacturer or the utility or the smelter or something else we haven't even thought of be more appropriate. We will come back on.
We'll come back on that.
Yeah.
The difficulty I have with this is if you've got the three major producers putting gas down a pipeline, who gets the credit? Who's got the contract? Who's delivering it? So those are issues, and that's a commercial arrangement that needs to be made between the manufacturer and the producer, and I think that's where that comes in. I think for us to try to get too involved in a commercial agreement of a who knows what kind of plan at this point. Is something we address possibly when we have something in front of us. But I think this is an incentive for us to go out. There are people that are genuinely interested in doing business in Alaska that need this natural gas, that right now it won't function under the tax rate that we have. And I think what we're trying to do is to incentivize and send a message to those people that we are in fact open for business. The way things are today, we are not. So I appreciate the little bit of the vagueness here. When we come down to commercial terms, that's going to be a contract between a producer and a manufacturer down the road. And as a state, what we need to do is set up a system and a process and a tax rate that allows that to go beyond just the what-if stage. And I am speaking for the sponsor now, I think. I don't think we're far off, but we'll find out in a minute. Representative Seaton.
We're on committee discussion now.
No, we're still, we haven't gone to public testimony yet, so we're in a committee discussion, so we're going to be very flexible. We've got some time on that. Kevin, you have anything else for Mr. Banks?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. With that, we will move on to public test. Did I miss you?
I got my question in there. I guess I got more statements now.
Let's go move to public testimony, and then we'll.
May I ask?
Representative Tuck?
One more opportunity.
Whom are you asking?
Anyone that can answer the question. And I think it's probably going to be the administration of the state at the moment. But potentially, what are some of the other statutes that could be affected by this? Bill, is there anything that we can see that will be affected beyond natural gas, or is it pretty specific? We're not going to be
We're as focused as we need to be. We're not overseeing anything or missing anything.
Of course not. This is the legislature.
Okay. even more important for the question.
That is a valid question. Commissioner Davis, do you see anything here where this is going to have an unintended consequence on other products? I mean, I know we're very targeted into the oil and gas section, and the, more particularly the gas section. There's nothing else that doing this will affect, is there or isn't there?
Chairman Johnson, we've looked at this. I think one of the representatives asked questions, a clarifying question regarding LNG around what is manufacturing process. I think as long as we think through the manufacturing process and ensure things that do not actually do not change the characteristics of the gas, but are merely changing the form in which it's transported, I think we should be okay. I think one of the areas that we need to think a little more about is the gas to liquids type of process, because you're essentially transforming gas into a diesel product, and that transformation process we need to think through and think whether it's more analogous to the LNG situation. It isn't really, because it truly is a molecular transformation and the change. So it has the manufacturing characteristics, but it's transforming it into another product. So we just need to think through how we would value that. And one of our challenges would be whether we look at it as gas sold, and if we look at the point of production, how do we value it? So we just need to think through the problems that causes. But other than that one area, I think as far as other standard manufacturing, we'd already gotten our arms around its use as fuel. There may be issues about LPG, perhaps, and just making sure that things that are taking gas off and transforming them into propane, where you're taking, you know, extracting various forms of liquids, as long as we make sure that we understand what side of the fence they fall on, I think we should be okay. But I don't see any reaching out into any of other statutory structures like credits or the way that we allocate costs and stuff. I think we should be okay.
Ms. Davis, isn't manufacturing changing one thing to another? I mean, isn't that all manufacturing?
That's how I would think of it. But then what I've come to find is that folks that are very knowledgeable about the, you know, petroleum industry, you know, I see gas and then I see LNG and I think, well, gee, that's manufacturing. And they say, no, that's just merely transforming it. So I know enough to know I'm dumb about this stuff. So I guess I want to step back and just make sure we've thought through with the experts and put a line that's clear enough so that taxpayers understand what side of the line they are with the various processes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Seaton, you have a...
Yeah, I guess what I was wanting to ask was, so do we have a good definition of natural gas that distinguishes that point at which propane is or isn't natural gas, or I just want to, the question, is that definition already in place?
We do have, Representative Seaton through the chair, we do have definitions in ACES. And we've described gas as meaning it's in section 43-55-900, subsection 8, and it describes it as all hydrocarbons that are recovered by mechanical separation of well fluids or by gas processing in a gas processing plant and exist in a gaseous phase at the completion of the mechanical separation in any gas processing. When you drop down and say, okay, what is gas processing? We've essentially identified that as something that involves use of absorption, adsorption, externally applied refrigeration, which I think picks up the LNG, artificial compression followed by adiabatic expansion using the Joule-Thompson effect, or another physical process that is not mechanical separation. So, yeah, we define it, and I guess we just need to make sure that that's readily understandable.
So we define it, but do we understand it? Representative C.
That's right.
So it was propane pulled out? Is that compressed since it's If it's not in a container, it's then gaseous. So is propane natural gas, or is it
yeah,
not?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I think propane is pretty clearly gas because I think it is pulled out through the compression and chilling and compression type application process to the gas stream. So that should be fine. Gas to liquids is a different thing, and I'm not sure where gas to liquids falls within when we look at this definition, if it would be considered gas processing or something beyond that, more of a manufacturing process. It may be that what we'll need to do is go back and look at having a definition for, I don't know. We'll have to look at this and just see what we could do to provide more clarity around where the line is drawn.
By Monday?
That may not happen by Monday. I think what we'll want to do is make sure and bring in some expertise from people in the industry that know these processes really well that we can reach out to.
Okay, thank you. Representative Duck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think it's really important that we understand the manufacturing definition as it applies to liquid natural gas, because one thing I don't want to see happen is I do want to see liquid natural gas used for Alaskans' needs, but if I'm reading this bill, regardless of the final disposition of the manufacturing product or creating a product in state, if we have gas turned to liquid natural gas and it defines as being manufactured, then that that's being manufactured as being export will also fall underneath this provision. And I just want to make sure, and I believe that if we keep LNG out of the definition, we still can use LNG based on the first part of this item 24. And the definition used in state, we'd still be able to use liquid natural gas for fuel, for power generation, and for other needs. So I just want to throw that out there.
And I want to throw you a real curve. What if we sell it as jet fuel and they fly it out of the state? Is it your intention that jet fuel would be exported?
No, in that case, Mr. Chair, is that that would actually be a feeder or a fuel, or, I mean, a feedstock for a manufactured process. Because that would be a gas liquids, right? So, but I would hope that gas liquids would fall in the definition of manufacturing.
Okay.
But liquid natural gas is the one I'm concerned about, because again, as was pointed out, it might be more of a transport definition than manufacturing.
Okay. Any additional questions for anyone online? With that, I'd like to go to public testimony, and we have online in Anchorage. Bill Knoll. Bill, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Would you please state your name and if you represent anyone, and proceed?
Right, this is Bill Knoll, N-O-L-L, and I am representing myself. Mr. Chairman, I just want to testify in support of House Bill number 217, and I think I could probably paraphrase my testimony or summarize it using referring to the comments you made just a couple of minutes ago. The bill looks to me like a proper and a useful tool to put out to the prospective manufacturers and developers of our planet. And they're from Asia, they're from Europe, and of course from the United States as well. It doesn't need to be said more than that, really, but I'll take another minute since I'm on the line. This is a tremendous resource that those of us who have been around puzzled over since the discovery of oil on the slope in 68, how to move any, much less all, of the natural gas to market in one way, shape, or another. And although there may be unexpected negative consequences, and by the way, there may be unexpected positive consequences of what you're contemplating here, still in all, it is an opportunity to monetize some of that tremendous asset that we have up there. The benefits in terms of jobs, other tax-based development, indirect jobs, transportation, marketing, and so on are easy to enumerate, and I'm sure you don't need that kind of assistance. But I want to enthusiastically support the bill and wish you good luck. I'll be in Juneau from Monday. I get the 8 o'clock flight. I'll be there the rest of the day, Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday morning. If I can be of any help to you, please let me know.
Thank you. And Mr. Noel, would you please, I mean, I see you're representing yourself, but I don't think that's quite fair. In your past life, you have been with Commerce and Economic Development and some other things. Can you please, just for the record, state some of your background that might lend a little credence to your testimony?
All right. I was born in Albany. No, that's two.
A little too far back.
Far back, okay. Currently, as a matter of fact, I'm a member of a nonprofit called Alaska Ratepayers, and our very experienced group, we have a lot of senior or experienced members of that little organization, are enthusiastically seeking ways to levelize rates for ratepayers, particularly in the rail belt, although our interest is certainly statewide. But more to the point of your question, I think, I have been in the past as Commissioner of Commerce under the Murkowski administration. I was his Deputy Commissioner of Commerce. I was Deputy Commissioner of Commerce for International Trade under Wally Hickel, too. I am past City Council member and mayor of Seward, Alaska, where I lived. I was the founding president of the what is now called the Alaska Sea Life Center, $60 million nonprofit for research. Many of you may have visited that place. On the commercial end of things, I maybe one of the highlights of the career was the initiation of the export of Alaska's coal to the Far East. Joe Usabelli Sr., the then federally owned Alaska Railroad, myself, and a Korean shipping company labored hard over that project. I stayed with that from concept through completion. By the time I left that company in 1991 and I started that concept in 1979, we had brought about $500 million into the state, and of course that the exports, although now we are in different markets, Joe Usabelli is, in Chile and in China and Japan and so on, and including Korea. I just warrant a guess that there's probably another $500 million and maybe more that project has brought to the state. So,
Yeah, thank you, Bill. You're not just a citizen off the street, that you do have some background, and I know you could go on forever.
And I don't mean to go on forever, but yes, I do, and I certainly have my heart into what I'm saying here. This is I very, very much like to see before too long. If I may add this, I think this could be conceived as a giant economic development project, quite different from the pipeline to Alberta or converting things into LNG and sending it to Asia and so on. This is a different animal. This is an economic development project. And should you see your way clear, and should producers and developers get this thing online, we could be looking at 1,000 jobs easily for a very long period of time. And we can certainly use it. I'm sure each of the committee members has been home and taken a look at what's going on in our economy, and it's a little bit uneasy, and especially for our young. So this you're adding to some potential here, and I greatly encourage it.
Thank you, Mr. Noel. Appreciate that, and looking forward to seeing you next week.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else online at any other LIOs to testify? Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, we will close public testimony. As I stated earlier, it is my intention to hold the bill. You want to come on up, Representative Newman? To get some of these questions answered. I agree with Mr. Noel and the sponsor that this is an economic opportunity. There are people looking at this state, but our tax structure is standing in the way. So this is an attempt to do that. And with that, before we wrap up, Representative Newman, do you have anything you'd like to add to the discussion to clarify any things we've discussed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, as somebody who's over the last couple of years spent literally thousands of hours looking at this project and mulling over and working towards it to make sure that we didn't have the hitches, to answer a lot of the questions that were out of there, work through them to make sure that they interfere with that. While we were working on this legislation, we worked hand-in-hand with the administration at the time. Even as of last Monday, or I guess the Monday before we came down here, I Actually, it was worked with Joe Balash quite a bit on this before that. Called and said, hey, Joe, what do you think of this? You still favoring? He says, absolutely. You know, we want to see something like this. But what we did, you know, a lot of the questions that Representative Seaton asked have to do with ACEs and AGEA and a lot of other legislation. And this doesn't have to do with that. This is simply, you know, that legislation was already discussed and debated and voted on and passed and signed into law when the 5% production tax was done for home heating and electrical generation and that. Those discussions on tax rates and values and BTU values and cost and dispositions and all that stuff was all hammered out and worked on because that's already done. Whether they're doing that now for home heating and electrical generation. You know, this quite simply just says if you take that gas and use it as a feedstock also to create jobs. And then manufacturing is definitely described in as a molecular change. And I guess if we wanted to go through the 10 or 20 hours that I know I could bore you through, but it absolutely fascinates me, I could, to talk about the Fischer-Tropsch process and how that works and the breakdown of the molecular change and the connecting of the sulfurs and the hydrogens to make it on there. And I could go through all that to show what a molecular change in the Fischer-Tropsch process and manufacturing processes and all that, if you'd like me to do all that for you.
That's quite all right. I think we've had presentations on Fischer-Tropsch.
Yeah. You know, it's a process that's been around since 1944, used in Germany when Russia, when they couldn't get gas, you know, and a gentleman by the name of Fischer and Tropsch actually created this process. So it's a long process, but it's the future of the fuel, or a fuel of the future. You know, it's a fuel that's got more energy, engines last longer, reduces maintenance, is considered biodegradable by the federal government. It's a non-hazardous waste, you know, things like that. It's an extreme demand globally to take our gas and try and use it to create jobs, you know. Representative Guttenberg said, well, you know, what about trying to make sure we're using it for manufacturing? And I think it was somewhere along the line is how do you value GTLs came up. Quite frankly, Fairbanks has been wanting gas for a long time, and we're trying to figure out how to get it there. You know, we're trying to figure out how to reduce the cost of the oil refineries that are up in that area of the state so that they can have cheaper gas prices that are taking oil and converting it into gas.
Representative Newman, I sense that you're trying to wrap up, but I don't think we're done here.
Well,
Representative Olson has a question.
Oh, no, I've got a simple one.
Okay, simple questions. Okay.
Simple questions. Will we have fiscal notes from revenue on oil and gas by Monday?
Ms. Davis, are you there?
I am, Chairman Johnson.
Did you hear the question about fiscal notes?
I did not. Please repeat that again.
Will we have fiscal notes by Monday?
Dan?
You weren't doing anything this weekend, were you?
I think we hadn't received them as of 11:54 this morning. And it does go to finance, and that's an area where they will be dealing with those. So.
Okay, we have been jamming on fiscal notes like you can't imagine. Lots of bills out there, and so we will make sure and get this one out. We'll strive for Monday.
Thank you very much.
Is that your only simple question? It didn't seem the question was simple. The answer was a little more complex.
Well, I was just waiting for Kevin to confirm that he's going to have his out.
He's not moving back there. Representative Tuck.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, and I'm sorry I'm a little delayed in my thinking, but the gentleman that was on earlier, Bill Knoll, and he's with the Alaska ratepayers, and I started thinking about the ratepayers. And just checking to see if we are potentially making it difficult for ratepayers. We're given a tax credit to the producers to make sure that we have gas available, an incentive to make sure that it's done locally for local jobs, and I really love that part of it. And we're protecting Alaska's best interests. We're not just exporting everything out untouched, and but just making sure that we have enough supply that there's not competing demands for that gas that ends up increasing the rates. So we just got to make sure that we incentivize the other end as well. I mean, we're taking care of producers to make sure that they're getting the breaks, to make sure it preferred to Alaska's best interests. But we also want to make sure that we have a volume that allows our manufacturers to compete worldwide, since it's most of the breaks going to the producers.
Yeah, let me take this one. Without this kind of anchor tenant for any kind of in-state gas pipeline, the tariffs will be huge, doubling and tripling the cost of gas right now in Anchorage, for example. If you have an anchor tenant, regardless of the tax structure, who is taking enough gas down there to lower the tariffs, that is what will generate the savings to the consumers. If we build a pipeline that will only do the 250 that we need statewide right now in the rail belt, the tariff would be huge. It would be way too much for us to even do. It would be, we'd be burning tires. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. We'd be in worse shape than a lot of places. With this kind of tax breaks, the desire and the hope is that we will attract those anchor tenants that will allow us to go from 250 to 500, lowering that tariff and guaranteeing that rate structure. So without this kind of process, whether tax breaks or not, the cost of delivering gas to Alaska without those anchor tenants, without the agrims, without some of the exports, is way beyond what we could afford as citizens in my community and yours as well. So, Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the explanation, because that's really the key. Because we want to make sure this is the anchor. This is what brings the volume of gas through the state of Alaska to make sure those rates are down. And that's the only reason why I bring it up. I want to make sure that this piece alone may not be able to do it. We got to still look at other avenues and other ways. And I really like the aspect of making sure that, you know, because it is Alaska's resources, that it benefits Alaskans to the max.
And that is the goal of this. Is it the only one? No. I've got some other people that are looking at everything from data farms that are going to use a huge amount of gas to the things here. This is part of it. I don't believe that this may be coupled, depending on the volume, with agrium, with the export, might get us where we need to be. I don't like the margins. I'd like to do more. So I think we need to keep all the doors open. But this is the first step to start the negotiations to get serious players into Alaska to start looking at the gas to liquids and all those other things that will be available to allow us to make those economics of an in-state pipeline work. This is the horse that goes before the cart. I'm sorry, Representative Newman. We probably agree so much on this. But I'll let you go ahead.
I'll just finish up with this, Mr. Chair. You know, I'll be here all weekend. I've been here. This is not a secret to anybody that I've been working on this. I'm available for questions anytime, anywhere, I'm right next door to quite a few of you. Stop on in. Well, we can answer your questions. And as far as, like, Representative Olson had a good question. Representative Olson had a good question. Well, what's the fiscal note? Well, right now, you know, the fiscal note is zero.
You know, still going to find it. You can't dodge
anything
that
better than zero is a positive.
Yeah. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, you know, fully agree with what you're talking about. But you were talking about an anchor tenant. And this is a production tax. And I think that a number of members have been talking about that this tax does not go to the manufacturer. This tax is on the production end. And that's why I was concerned about the effects of this, because we've had this 5% tax in Cook Inlet for 20 years. And our big problems, ever since I've been in the legislature, we've been having to come back and try to increase incentives, credit incentives, to get people to explore. Because with a 5% tax, we couldn't get people to go out and, you know, there's kind of identified gas and there's not the exploration. So we've done step out credits and everything else. So we do have to come back and make sure that as we go forward, the program accomplishes our goal. I mean, I fully agree with the goal that the bill is, and I'm not arguing against the bill. Right. But sometimes we get talking about this as if we lower the tax on the producer, that's automatically going to make things cheaper for the consumer. And we've got the RCA in there, and then things are so much cheaper for the consumer that the producers, even at a 5% tax rate, won't go out and explore because the profit margin isn't there. So I'm not arguing against this.
All valid points.
I think we
and we will be looking
need to bring all those things together.
And we'll be looking at those. I think some of the spreadsheets we'll see will help and see exactly what it has. Representative Olson?
One final comment. We had an anchor tenant come down to the Kenai Peninsula 3 years ago. Spent a couple days with Speaker Chenault, myself, Senator Wagner, the borough mayor, the mayors of Kenai and Soldotna, the people from Kenai Peninsula College. Talked to the people on the North Road. They were extremely interested. The borough had land available. We've got an existing infrastructure. We've got existing gas lines. The one thing we didn't have was a day of gas for the next 10 years. And that was the end of the conversation. They're looking 10 years out. They need a 10-year supply, and they need it steady. And as Mark was saying, everybody else said, it's not going to be a small diameter line. If we're going to bring something down, we're going to have to be able to ramp it up enough to have a B-a-day surplus if we're going to attempt a big one. I mean, half a B, we might be able to get Agrium back. I don't know. But if we want somebody world-class, it's going to be more.
Representative Newman, anything else before we give everyone a part of the afternoon off?
Everybody feel free to come and talk to me anytime you want to learn more about this, please.
Ms. Davis, do you have anything to add before we recess? I appreciate your help, and I know we probably signed you up for some weekend work, and I apologize, but it is the legislature. We're here to help.
No, it's no problem, Chairman Johnson. We will work hard on coming up with the modeling that will hopefully respond to the concerns about impacts to the current incentives under ACES.
Yeah, and Ms. Davis, I am not one of those chairmen that has to have everything come through me. So if any member of the committee has a question, I'm going to encourage them to talk to you directly as well as the sponsor. But I would like to be informed of what it is so that we can kind of know where we are for Monday.
Absolutely, sir.
Thank you. And Mr. Rogers, do you have anything to add before we sign off? I probably tied up your weekend as well.
You know, there's been a lot of reference made to the 5% tax rate, but it's 5% times a value, which works out to 17.7 cents per MCF. So, you know, it's not like 5% on the gross value. It's 5% times a average old historical value of $3.65, and so it's 17.7 cents per MCF is the 5% that we're talking about here, and that's fairly low.
Okay, thank you. Anything appreciated so much. Anything else to come before the committee, Mr. Banks? Do you have anything else to add?
Thank you,
Ms. Sickles. Do you have anything else to add? We'll take this up Monday before we hear a riveting testimony from TransCanada, which we will try to start precisely at 1. I would like to get this out with that, having answered all the questions. I want to make sure that we do due diligence. With that, I'm just going to wait till everybody leaves. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you. It's 1.